My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast, here with Seth Payne on Payne and Pendergast. And we're just a couple of weeks away from Texans training camp. And I got Texans training camp takes, man. I know that when Sean gets back from vacation, he's going to have plenty. I imagine that while he's enjoying his vacation with his lovely wife, Amy, he's thinking of more of his Texans training camp takes. And I expect him to be hot as hell whenever he gets back. And I'm excited to hear him. But for now, I'm keeping the seat warm. For now, I'm occupying this space with my man, Seth Payne. So I'm going to throw these off of you, Seth. And I want to hear what you think. You've already heard some of them. We can revisit a few. But I got a few that we didn't get to, and they're piping hot.
Well,
we got to get
the
your
ones,
takes.
These are the ones I feel like you're going out on more of a limb with some of these ones, which is good. The first ones, I feel like you were just getting warmed up.
Oh yeah,
and it was there are a few in there that I honestly I feel like that they weren't quite as potentially boneheaded as I would have preferred. Now I'm gonna get the bonehead hot takes.
Yeah, so I've got this quality about me that I'm not sure makes me good for radio or bad for radio, but I like to be just like rational and to talk with good sense. But I got some here's my thing, Sid. Here's what makes me a little bit bad at radio. My most ridiculous and controversial opinions I tend to keep to myself. I've got a lot of them. I've got a ton of them.
Yeah.
But I just don't I feel like it's smarter to not express them, to not share them with people, because people will think more highly of you the fewer dumb things that you say. You keep the dumb thoughts to yourself, and it makes you look smarter.
There's some truth to that, okay? But there's also, you got to remember, man, we all live in the moment. And people don't necessarily remember the stupid stuff you've said as readily. I mean, they will. They'll remember some stupid stuff. But they're forgiving. Humans are a forgiving type, so yeah. As long as they know it comes from a good place, and you're not just like, okay, My most unpopular take this offseason was that I really wanted Derrick Henry more than Saquon Barkley.
Well, we were together on that. We were together on that, by
the
way.
Yeah, yeah. So it was very unpopular, but it came from a genuine place. It wasn't like I was just throwing that out there. I would say I only got maybe like 10 to 20% buy-in from people who respect me. Like, from people who might otherwise agree with me on lots and lots of things. I didn't get a lot of buy-in on that, but I really, really believed it. There were reasons I liked Derrick Henry more than Saquon Barkley for this team. So as long as you're coming to it from a place where, you know, you're not just trying to be different for the sake of being different, then people respect that.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be different for the sake of being different on this, but I do think this is a little edgy, and I hope, because I haven't met this guy yet personally, I hope he doesn't take offense to this, and maybe I'll be on the other side of this if he does.
I'm going to at him on social media as soon as you say this, but go ahead.
Seth, I think Azeez Al-Shaair is going to get into a fight.
I don't think he'd mind that at all.
I think Azeez Al-Shaair and or DeNico Autry, I throw him out there too because of the way Nick Caserio describes him as like a junkyard dog type of dude that you want in the alley if you're going to, you know, if you find yourself in that type of situation, bar fight, whatever it is, or if you got.
So you're talking about a fight in training camp or in a game?
You know, training camp. Training camp. Well, this is a training camp. I mean, in the game for sure. That to me is not a piping hot take at all. I mean, all these guys get into fights in the game, but I'm talking about like friendly fire. But for me though, and maybe this takes a little bit of the flame off of it, but I do believe this. For Azeez Al-Shaair, I could see him getting into a fight, but in more of like a leadership way and not in a turdish way, like I just want to bully you or pick on a guy or fight a guy. But it's going to be more one of those kicking the ass. It could be a guy even on the defensive side, or if it's a guy on the offensive side, it could just be, you know, the natural tension and testosterone from a training camp or from a training camp practice. But he seems like the type, Azeez Al-Shaair and DeNico Autry, candidates for me to get into a fight on the field at Texans training camp.
There used to be, I can't remember, can you remember a fight last year in training camp?
Not last year, but I do remember one 2 years ago.
What was the one two years ago?
That apparently, this is funny to me, Seth. No one tweeted about it, no one talked about it, and it feels like nobody remembers this. But 2 years ago when Lovie Smith was the coach.
Yeah.
Dez King and... damn it, what was the safety's name? He got hurt. Terrence something. He didn't end up making the team, I feel like. Or the next year, he didn't end up making the team. But his first name was, I feel bad, because they had a Terrence.
That's all right. We'll just call him Terrence.
They had a Terrence who was a cornerback, and they had a Terrence who was a safety. And one was with an E, and one was with an A. That's all I can remember. But this guy ended up getting hurt earlier in the season. Terrence Harris. I can't remember the guy's name.
Terrence Brooks.
Terrence Brooks. There it is. Terrence Brooks is the name. So Terrence Brooks and Dez King, fisticuffs right there on the sideline at the end of a drill. Both got in a lick, and Lovie Smith made him run a lap around. Like, it was almost like high school.
Oh, I remember that now. Yeah, because they had to run a lap.
And it was like a non-event. It was like a non-event. Yeah. I was like, oh. I mean, these guys went after it. Like, punches thrown and everything, but it was real quick. And
there used to be a lot more fights in training camp, and a couple things happened. One was like, because I was there, like I used to, when I was a young player, we used to get in fights all the time. Like, it was almost like I got in fights a lot my rookie training camp, partly just like almost as a way of just showing that you're not a punk and everything. And like, it used to be way more common. And Tom Coughlin was my coach at the time, and he was kind of old school in that I think he looked at that as like a sign that you got guys who are, you know, guys who are fighting and competitive and everything. And then one year, our first round pick, Marcus Stroud, broke his hand on an offensive lineman's face, not on his face mask, on his face, because he'd gotten the dude's helmet off and cracked him in the forehead, and he broke his hand. And like after that, there's no more fighting. So I like coaches in general, I think, got a lot more. They just realized like how dumb it was to lose a guy in training camp to a fight. So they got a lot more strict about it round about that era. And then also just because the training camps aren't as long and as brutal physically anymore, guys just aren't guys aren't as pissy as they used to be. They used to just get so tired and pissed off that at some point you had a bunch of guys with hair triggers out there fighting. So it's a lot less common these days. But I think I wonder how D'Amico feels about it. He doesn't want guys fighting in general. But it's kind of like when your kid misbehaves and there's a part of you that's like, kid's got a little juice to him. All right. Let's see. I'm going to punish you. And I'm not going to see you. I'm not going to let you see me smiling about it as you're running your lap. So, yeah, I could see Al Shire being that guy.
This happened to me, Seth, with my youngest daughter, my seven-year-old. So she's at a summer camp, not a church camp, but like a Boys and Girls Club type of thing.
Yeah.
And last week, she's like, for whatever reason, her and her brother, they're 17 months apart. So they horseplay. She tickles the brother, and he like gets squeamish, like he like moves around because he's being tickled, and he runs into another kid, like he hits another kid. And the other kid realizes it and takes offense and wants to fight my daughter. And she doesn't back down at all. And in fact, I don't think she broke her hand, but She got a fist on the skull as well, enough to get her suspended from the Boys and Girls Club program for 2 days.
Oh, geez, really?
Yeah. I had to come up with a child care plan for her for 3 days because I was hosting In the Loop. I had to come up with a child care plan because she wanted to go to fisticuffs with a boy at the Boys and Girls Club.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. As long as she's not like the especially when it's your daughter standing up for herself, like that's kind of a good feeling. As long as she's not, you know, out bullying people and everything.
Then
you feel like, oh, okay, she's got some juice to her. Yeah.
And my mom finds out about it first, and she's even, you know, obviously older school than I am. So
yeah.
She comes from an era where this is how you solve issues, how you solve problems.
And
she's like, I was kind of proud of her, but it's an issue now because we don't have anywhere for her to go. So we were both, to your point, we were both kind of like, wink, wink, nod, nod. Good job sticking up for yourself. But how about next time just keep your damn hands to yourself so we don't have to come up with a child care plan?
Well, I think that's I think there is something to D'Amico Autry and Al Shire both that's how they were talked about in Tennessee, is that those guys, in a lot of ways, when I just was going through and looking at what people were in from the Titans blogging sphere and everything were saying about those two guys heading into free agency, they were recognized as like, all right, these guys are kind of like a heart and soul. These guys are dogs. These guys are the kind of guys that kind of set the tone for how you want to be as a defense. That those two guys are good candidates. And not that that means that you got to get in a fight to show that kind of thing or anything, but they're just kind of wired that way, I think. And, you know, the way Casario has talked about D'Amico Autry has been a lot in those same regards.
Jalen Petrie. I got Jalen Petrie making plays, so much so, not just that he's making plays, but he's making so many plays that he sets the stage for a comeback narrative. You know, these narratives.
He goes from being a guy that we're kind of disappointed in how he seemingly regressed a little bit in year two to, it's not just like, oh, okay, he's going to be all right, but like, oh, okay, this guy could be a genuine just stud playmaker.
Yeah.
Like you could completely flip the narrative on year two.
Yeah. Watch out for Jalen Petrie. He's picking off CJ Stroud. He's stuck Dalton Schultz or Cade Stover in the gut all over the middle, or, you know, like he's going to make some wild plays, I think, in training camp that is going to reset the narrative, or at least set the stage for a new narrative. And you know, this is a part of training camp, Seth, both as a player and as a media member. Now, you've seen how it goes. We get there, we observe, we decide what the stories are, and we get to going with the narratives. I think that that's one that's absolutely is going to happen. Because Jalen Petrie does tend to make plays in practice, tends to have a knack and a nose for the ball, I think. Just needs to probably play within the scheme a little bit better.
Well, yeah, I think that's interesting when you frame it that way, because I think if he makes a bunch of plays in practice, especially where you don't have the benefit of going back and seeing what happened on any specific play, usually you can't go back and watch it on film for the vast majority of plays that they have out there. I think that the part of his problem last year was that he needs to be more surgical in when he chooses to be aggressive, and that there were a lot of times where he was beat on double moves because I think he was anticipating an in-breaking route or an out-breaking route, and then he got double moved like by DeAndre Hopkins pretty glaringly a couple times. That's the whole test for him. It's not the plays that you see, it's the plays you don't see where he's practicing discretion. So in training camp, if he's making a bunch of plays in practice, I'm probably still going to be a little bit nervous about, all right, has he learned when he can be aggressive and when he can't be aggressive? Because that's really the big, which also is, but that is one of the things that encourages me about him making a comeback this year, is that it's more of a psychological and experience type issue. Like he needs to be a little bit more like a veteran player and know when to dial it back. And that's something you can see him fixing, but I don't know if it's something we necessarily really get to see play out for real until the regular season starts.
Are you surprised at all that they have not added to that position outside of, not really seriously added to that position outside of drafting Kalen Bullock in the third round?
I'm guessing that they've had conversations about Justin Simmons, who I believe is still out there as a free agent.
There's almost no way, Seth. It feels like there's almost no way that they don't at least have the conversation, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah. No, I think they definitely have talked about it, and I think that they're probably waiting to see exactly. Look, you drafted a rookie high, and relatively high. You've got Jalen Petrie, and they want to see how both those guys develop. And with the stuff, even as I'm saying, like as a fan or as a media member, it's going to be hard for us to figure out in training camp, like whether Jalen Petrie has fixed some of those issues from last year. But I think they're going to be watching very closely to see if they can tell a difference. And they'll be able to, you know, they can go back and watch the film and everything in practice. And that they might be kind of holding Justin Simmons in reserve back there to see how Bullock plays as well, to figure out exactly what they need to do there and if they need to go outside to bring somebody else in.
I didn't love those pictures that Sean shared from Bullock at the rookie minicamp with the bird legs, and I didn't really necessarily love it when I saw. I was like, man, nobody needs to have anything look anything like me. Like if you look comparable to my skinny ass, then there's a real issue with you being out there on the football field. But when I actually watch him play football, like go back and watch his stuff at USC, I mean, he's another one that seems like a playmaker. Like he's gonna have to get bigger and stronger and be a better tackler, but I talk about a nose and a knack for a football, for the football and making plays. He seems to be of that ilk as well.
Well, and that's where too, when you know, if you've got a guy that in situations he can be a genuine deep center fielder type of safety, it becomes less of an issue. So in certain packages, like I think they're going to use him situationally, but a lot of that goes back to, all right, do they trust that Jalen Petrie playing up around the box, can they trust them to be more on point all the time? And then you've got your backstop there in Bullock. I think there's an avenue for that. And then as far as him just being skinny, the weird comparison I keep going back to in my mind is Jack Lambert, the linebacker from the Steelers from back in the day, who was probably one of the most fearsome people ever to play in the NFL, but was like lanky as all get out. He just had that, like that ranch hand toughness to him. Yeah, he's just a wiry, tough as hell dude I wonder how much maybe Bullock has that in him. That, like, don't be deceived by how lanky and skinny he is. Just like Randy Moss was so lanky, but he was also so strong. Like a lot of getting mossed wasn't about him always necessarily being the guy that could jump higher. It was about a guy that just out-muscled people. And I think Bullock might have kind of a deceptive strength to him.
He's Seth Payne. I am Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast coming up next. How worried should we be about Justin Verlander and Kyle Tucker? Stay there.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Except it's just Seth Payne, no Pendergast. Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast. One of the pieces of news that we got on 4th of July, as we were celebrating the holiday, shout out to America. Was that
shout
just
out to America?
I said that. Yeah. I said that on a hit on the drive the other day with Ron and Clint in defending a take that actually Lopez had, and I didn't disagree with it. It was that 4th of July as an event was overrated, and we don't have to get into that now, but. In explaining that, I gave the shout out to America, and everybody got a kick out of it. It's like, hey, man, we should make that a drop. But I was like, yeah, man, shout out to America. I love America. I just feel like I think my issue with 4th of July is really more of an issue of how much we already barbecue here in Texas.
So you're talking about almost like the way we celebrate 4th of July and everything compared to the actual. There's a little bit of an element of like with Christmas, right? Like where, the actual holiday versus how we celebrate it and everything.
Yes.
Maybe don't quite jibe the way that ideally it might.
Exactly. And then I'm just not like, and this is not a, everybody, be patriotic how you will, but I don't wrap myself up in the flag, and so I'm not. I just none of that really resonates with me. I love America, but I'm not a patriot in the superficial sense, for lack of a better term. And I'm not calling you patriot superficial. I'm just saying it's not my thing. Uh-huh. And so outside of that, I mean, the big thing is the barbecue and the day off. So it's like I can get barbecue pretty much any weekend here in Houston, because all my friends grill, so we all do it. So it's like, okay, the only difference here for me is the day off and the flag stuff. Like outside of that, I'm like, okay, a brisket, a hot dog, hamburgers, like I eat all that stuff all the time.
The Jason Pierre-Paul incident, which is now long in the past, but that Jason Pierre-Paul losing half his hand to firecrackers, that kind of changed my whole My whole fireworks approach to everything.
Yeah.
I used to be way more like literally hands-on involved with fireworks. I don't do that anymore.
Same.
The fireworks safety Gestapo got to me, and now I just try to observe from afar.
Yeah. I was pressured into doing the whole fireworks thing for New Year's with my kids.
Yeah.
With some friends, they were like, hey, man, you got to do this, man. Your kids, fireworks, you know, we've been through a lot. So we're trying to, like, have a good, you know, just have a good time. And the holidays are difficult these days. So it's like, yo, okay, I'll do this. But, oh, yeah, by the way, I stopped doing that almost, like, well over 10 years ago when Jason Pierre-Paul blew his hand off.
I think the whole thing about 4th of July, like, I guess as I've gotten to be an old man now, though, too, like, because I think in getting back kind of the theme of like, hey, remember about, you know, like why Christmas is Christmas and everything versus being about the gift giving and all that, or the Christmas tree or what have you. I gotta try to be more reflective about things. So like 4th of July has transformed for me from like as a young person where I was all about like almost like the thumping your chest part of it to like more of a history lesson about, you know, America has always from the get-go been obviously like every other state in the world, imperfect in a lot of ways, that we don't live up to what our stated ideals are, but that it's an aspiration. Like from the very beginning, America and all the ideals that we would ideally have it be, it's never been that way. It's in like to an extreme degree for the first 100 years of the Union, obviously.
Yeah.
Like Independence Day wasn't independence for everybody. But like that it's a matter of, okay, like let's reset our goals and try to become more of that which we, you know, are supposed to try to be. So it's so unfortunately for the youth in my life, it becomes a history lesson. But it's still like I kind of find more pride in it. I think I've a more genuine pride in that part of it than maybe I did when I was younger. It's easy to say like we're number one versus like, okay, this is how things were, this is how they are now, this is how we got to where we are, and it's been a long and sometimes twisted path to get there.
Even Juneteenth is the celebration of finding out something very important late, right?
Yeah, exactly, right. Well, you know what? The Juneteenth, it's interesting because I grew up in an area of the country where Juneteenth wasn't, like nobody knew what, I'd never heard of Juneteenth or anything. So it was very much a different set of history books that we were studying than they were in Texas and in the region and what have you. So yeah, I guess that goes along with it, is kind of learning about Juneteenth goes hand in hand with learning about the 4th of July.
Oh, yeah.
And like what independence meant for some people, but certainly not for all the people who were living in America at the time, some of whom were counted as 2/3 of a person.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I've got friends on all.
Excuse me, 3/5. 3/5.
Yeah, I've got people on all. Yeah, that's right.
I even tried to give them more benefit of the doubt than they deserve.
Yeah, I was going to say
3/5, not 2/3. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was going to say, man, yeah, two thirds would have been that would have been a come up.
We celebrate the day they made it 2/3 instead of 3/5. Yeah,
I got people on the opposite ends of the radical spectrum of like, I don't want to call these folks radical, but you got like the 4th of July crowd, and then I got another crowd that's like won't even celebrate Juneteenth because of the tardiness of it, right?
Oh, okay.
Because of how late, they're like, we're not going to celebrate the crime of finding out slavery was over 2 years later, you know, we should be indicting them for this, you know. So like it's a large spectrum. But either way,
That's the sloppiness that is a democracy.
That's right. And the sloppiness that is also the health of two key Houston Astros, I'm somewhat concerned. I don't know if I'm too concerned, but I'm somewhat concerned about Justin Verlander and Kyle Tucker. We're not going to see them. Some news we got, and I was mentioning this when we started the segment, and then we gave a little history lesson there. But some news we got over the break or over the holiday was that Justin Verlander and Kyle Tucker more than likely will not be back, or we should not expect them back, either of them back, until after the All-Star break. My question to you, Seth Payne, is should we be worried, or are you worried about either or both of these guys?
I'm worried about Verlander. I'm not worried about Tucker. I think that Tucker, I was the absolute worst when it came to just expecting the most out of Kyle Tucker. I was at the game when he got injured, and I just kind of, the next morning I told Sean, like, he'll be in the lineup today. He'll be fine. Tucker never misses any time. You know what I was swayed a little bit too much by? Because Kyle Tucker's been such an Iron Man in so many respects by modern standards.
Yes.
It was, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm blanking on it. Oh, Cal Ripken Sr. So Cal Ripken Sr. was very durable, just like Cal Ripken Jr. Would be, his son. But Cal Ripken Sr., like, I guess just was one of these guys that would get an injury and then be recovered the next day. And there was this story about him. He was a first base coach once. He was working as a first base coach, and he got hit in the face with a line drive and showed up the next day without even a bruise on his face or anything. Like, he was just like, he was like Bruce Willis in Unbreakable. He was just like a freak of nature. Something in the Ripken family was genetically unbreakable. So I kind of look at Kyle Tucker like that. Like, okay, this guy just doesn't really get hurt. So it'll be a bruise. He'll come out and he'll play. And then you fast forward to several weeks later, and he's just still hobbling around whenever we got a chance to see him in public. That it's still at the root of it all, I want to believe, just a bone bruise. And obviously it's more than just a bone bruise. It's a really, really bad bone bruise. But just like a broken bone, the rehab is relatively straightforward once it heals. That he's going to get out. It shouldn't affect the way he moves or anything like that. And he might be rusty when he gets back, but I think that by the end of the season, within a few couple of weeks of him coming back, I would expect him to have his timing back and everything else like that. So I'm not as worried about him. Justin Verlander is the one that, at this point in my mind, he might not come back at all again this season, or he might, you know, come back and be just fine. But even if he's healthy when he comes back this next time, he's at an age when guys get injured a lot, and he's gotten injured a lot, and he's had a lot of injuries and setbacks in those rehabs in this time. So I almost like have him in a Lance McCullers compartment in my brain right now, where I don't want to rely on him when it comes to projecting the roster in the second half of the season. And it, almost maybe if I take that Lance McCullers Justin Verlander compartment, I expect to maybe get one viable starter out of that. Somehow you get somebody out of that. I will not complain, no matter how aggressive they get in finding another starting pitcher at the before the trade deadline.
This is an interesting way to look at it, and I had not considered this, of putting Verlander in the McCullers mental compartment. And then the thing you said about between the two of them, can you get a starter? Or, I mean, maybe even like between the two of them, can you get a starter, and is McCullers an option finally now at this stage and with everything that's happened with him health-wise? Now is he an option in the bullpen? Like, could Verlander be a back end of the rotation guy, or maybe somebody that you can rely on to start a third game in a postseason series, and then McCullers be a long relief or somebody that can just go in and give you whatever he can? Like, I hadn't thought about that. Of can you get one guy between these two guys that are legends for you for what they've done in the past, but just have not been able to be the same as of late?
Yeah, which is, I mean, and it's unfair. It's unfair for me to put Verlander in that same category, and I guess it's ageist in a lot of ways, because he pitched 162 innings last year. It's not like he's on this long stretch of just not doing anything, but that's still 162 innings for him is a stark departure from back in the days when he would routinely be over 200 innings every single year. So I think, like, of those two, of Verlander and McCullers, I think the ceiling for my expectations is still a lot higher for Verlander. But I also just think realistically I can't depend on it. Not right now, not given how hard it's been for him physically as he's gotten older.
It's just weird for me, Seth, to go from when the neck first started hurting, they were saying, you know, they were optimistic about him not even having to have an IL stint to begin with, to now you and I talking about it, not even sure if we can confidently say he's going to pitch for them again. Like, we cannot say that with our chest right now. From that to this.
I guess I feel confident that he'll pitch again. I feel pretty confident that he'll pitch again. I feel partly confident that he'll pitch again, but will it be for the duration of the season? I just don't know. I just don't know. That makes me nervous when you look at all the good things they've done, but part of this run that they're on right now, they've been able to make because they didn't really need that reliever start until a few days ago, last Sunday or whenever it was. And that it's going to be hard to sustain that over the course of the season if you don't, and you're not getting Luis Garcia back. You will get Luis Garcia back in a couple weeks, but it's just not, you're still going to be short of hand there because we can't trust Arrigetti. You know, there's just the guys that I really, really trust until Luis Garcia comes back in the flesh and is fine. Yeah, you get to the playoffs, four good starters is all you need, theoretically. But it's like this is a team that's still just barely above 500. Like, we're not even close to having the playoff discussion about a four-man rotation.
He is Seth Payne. I am Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast. Coming up next on Payne and Pendergast. Last hour, we talked about the Texans' biggest potential weakness. What about around the rest of the AFC South? We'll get into that next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Final segment here on Payne and Pendergast. Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast. And earlier in the show, we talked about the biggest weakness for the Texans going into training camp. But CBS Sports made an attempt to look at the biggest weakness for all of the AFC teams. All of the AFC teams going into training camp. And so I figured, okay, we can talk about the Texans. And if you missed it, they say defensive tackle. Fortunately, we've got an expert in defensive tackle here on the show to kind of talk about that with us. So I feel good about that. I was like, oh, defensive tackle. I know who to talk about that with. So that was pretty cool. But on top of that, though, and I feel like
I wasn't able to give you the answer that I feel this all offseason. I'm giving an answer about how I feel about the defensive tackle, and it's more optimistic than most people's, but it's not the answer they want to hear.
Yeah.
It's not, I'm not delivering them to a promised land.
Yeah, but you know, you're not no damn jukebox. You know, this ain't a, this is not have it your way. I don't know if Burger King still does it, have it your way, so that might be a dated reference. But this ain't Burger King of the late 90s. You don't get to just have it your way. We encourage your input. 713-572-4610 is how you text the show. We want you to comment in our YouTube and chat, or our YouTube and Twitch chat streams and everything like that. But this ain't no have it your way. We're going to give you what we think, man. We're going to give you what it is. And to me, like, I can appreciate the opposite perspective of the defensive tackle situation. I wouldn't even call it opposite, just some perspective on the defensive tackle situation with the Texans, because I remember Seth sitting right here in this studio and just being not mad or disappointed, but really just outright confused and somewhat bewildered by what the Texans were doing at that position. Like, when they traded Malik Collins, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to pretend like Malik Collins is freaking Warren Sapp or anything. Like, I don't want to overstate this thing, but Malik Collins is a good football player. Or at least I thought he was. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. So I'm like, okay, he's a good football player. They just paid him last year. I don't get this. I don't understand what they're doing here. Now, we later understand they were trying to get Arik Armstead, and then they realized that they got a shot at Danielle Hunter, so they wanted to make sure they could do that. And just the way the dominoes fell did not work out for them to replace or to fill the tackle, the defensive tackle position the way maybe we would have ideally wanted them to. But I think that we'll take what they did on the edge. And there is an element of trusting in D'Amico Ryans as a defensive mind, as a leader. And even Nick Caserio, I think, to a large degree, as a team builder, as a roster constructor, to kind of figure it out, even if they are going to take a slight step back at that position.
Well, I think that, you know, I watched the first episode of Hard Knocks yesterday, where Joe Shane, their GM, was taking a lot of heat for some of the little clips that had popped out in the previews and everything, where it almost made it look like Joe Shane didn't think Saquon Barkley was that good or what have you. When you watch the entire episode and you watch the discussions they were having about it, it was much more so that Joe Shane very much respects Saquon Barkley as a running back, but that they just have so many holes to fill that I don't think Joe Shane respected the running back position in total as much as like getting these various other needs that they have on the roster and these holes filled, and that he didn't want to spend that Saquon Barkley type of money on whether he was worth it or not. He didn't want to spend that kind of money on the running back position when they need to, they've got only so many pieces of the pie that they can actually fill. So yeah, likewise, I think the Texans wanted a defensive tackle, but they saw this opportunity to just maybe make the edge rushers so fearsome that they can live with a more blue collar effort at defensive tackle if they have that opportunity to get an edge rusher. But it wasn't as it's not like they wouldn't have preferred to also address defensive tackle. They just couldn't make it work with Arik Armstead.
It's an exact dynamic, though, that I wanted to ask you about earlier. Was this whole this idea, especially you, somebody who played the idea of, hey, I'm willing to live with a more blue collar approach in the middle if I can get badasses on the outside, and I think we'll all agree that they have that with the young Will Anderson going into year two, and Danielle Hunter, the established guy that he is. How do you view that approach just generally, and then how do you view it the way that the Texans are going to apply it? Like, hey, we're badasses on the edge, and we got some blue collar guys that are just going had a hard hat and be ready to play in the middle.
I think that if I had to choose between Arik Armstead or like Arik Armstead with Danico Autry on the edge as like the other guy that I think would have played a lot more as just a pure edge player if Danielle Hunter weren't there, I like the setup they have right now just because Danielle Hunter is that good, and that Arik Armstead also has age and injury concerns, and he's missed some time in the last couple of years as a guy who's in his 30s. And he's not as impactful a pass rusher as Danielle Hunter. I think that's the part that, above and all, like, first and foremost, if you want to be a really fearsome defense in the modern NFL, you want to have good pass rushers, like scary pass rushers. And they've got that in Danielle Hunter, and I think likely they have that in Will Anderson as long as he takes another step forward like a lot of young pass rushers do from year one to year two. So I would prefer the situation they have right now. It doesn't mean that I'm super, super comfortable with the defensive tackle situation, but I just think that's a better, more aggressively, that's a more aggressive mindset to have those two A-plus edge rushers on your roster.
So I thought this was interesting in CBS Sports' list of the weaknesses for every AFC team. They break it down by division, and when they get to the AFC South, every team in the division, their listed or stated weakness by per CBS Sports is on the defensive side of the ball. Okay, so for the Texans, as we mentioned, it's defensive tackle. But the other teams in the division, and this makes me feel good about the Texans because I feel like they have the best quarterback. I feel like their offense I feel best about. And maybe you could throw the Colts out there because of their offensive because of their head coach. Like, I believe in Shane Steichen. We'll see how things go with Anthony Richardson, if he can stay on the field, how it's going to translate. He looked like less of a project when he was healthy. When he was out there, he looked like less of a project than the way he was discussed or the way he was billed coming out of Florida. So that will be interesting if he can actually stay on the field, how his skill set and Shane Steichen's coaching will marry up, and what that's going to look like. But as it pertains to the Texans right now, as we sit here, I feel best about them offensively. And if what CBS Sports is saying about the division, if it's to be believed or if it is true, I'm like, okay, well, all I'm looking at is, okay, the Colts, What's their biggest weakness? Cornerback. All right. Well, they ain't got nobody that can stay with all of these weapons and compete with C.J. Stroud, with C.J. Stroud and his weapons. Same thing for the Jaguars. Their weakness, cornerback. They don't have nobody that can stay with all of these weapons and compete with C.J. Stroud. Titans, defensive line. Oh, great. They don't have enough to get to C.J. Stroud. And thank God, because I don't know what this offensive line is for sure going to look like. They had a historic number of injuries, it felt like, last year. So I look at this list, and I think, for as much as I think about, oh, I don't know exactly what this defensive tackle situation is going to look like for the Texans, I'm like, if this list is believed to be true, the rest of the division better watch out. Because their weaknesses are on defense, and the Texans' very, very, very specific strength is in C.J. Stroud and all them weapons that they got.
The one thing that I would say about the Titans' weakness is that they list defensive line as their weakness. I guess a lot of that depends on what they get out of Tavondre Sweat, the kid from University of Texas who looks about 350 pounds and has all the potential to be a really, really menacing player. But in my mind, it's if he can play at 320. Like, he really, like, you could see in college when his weight got to him and when that he just kind of ran out of steam at times. So for this Texans offensive line, which is still very unproven on the interior, a lot of it rides on, all right, if this Tavondre Sweat ends up getting religion and, like, playing at a slimmer body weight, that he could be a real, like, a literal headache for the Texans. And even if he can't, like, all it takes is him, Tavondre Sweat, bull rushing your left guard once or twice directly into the lap of C.J. Stroud, then that you've got issues there. So that's the one thing to watch with the Titans. I think with the Colts like their young guys a lot. Jalen Jones and Dallas Flowers are like a second and a third year player that I think the Colts really like, and that Dallas Flowers didn't develop quite the same way that they thought he was going to, but they're still very bullish on him. So I think that's the thing to watch for the Colts is, all right, do they actually have a weak spot there? Because the Colts, in their offseason, they did very, very little to add. Like, it was about re-signing Kenny Moore and a few of those other guys, and yet that was a team with Gardner Minshew as the quarterback that was within one or two series versus the Texans of making the playoffs last year. You know, they kind of had the Texans' exact same season. It's just that they did it under the radar and with Gardner Minshew, so there wasn't a lot of fanfare about it. I guess that's the thing that's where it all goes back to. They might have questions on their defense with the Colts, but the huge X factor by far still is just Anthony Richardson and what he looks like with Shane Steichen over the course of 17 games, if he can actually stay on the field for 17 games.
Yeah, you mentioned Tavondre Sweat, Texas Longhorn, Huntsville kid. If he can just go out there and just be a compliment to Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah.
You know, like that terrifies me. terrifies it. Like, if he can just be, forget being like a star or anything, but if he can be disciplined, play at a controllable weight, and just be disruptive and be a compliment to Jeffrey Simmons. I don't know about that being a weakness. I know that actually scares the hell out of me. Almost,
right? Yeah,
almost cuts too. Almost it scares the bleep out of me.
Because Jeffrey Simmons is going to. Jeffrey Simmons is going to command a lot of double teams, as he tends to do. And when you pair that with a guy like Tavondre Sweat, even if he's only on the field for 25 or 30 snaps, then that, you know, Tavondre Sweat getting singled up versus last year's version of a Texans left guard, whether it was a banged up, you never saw Kenyon Green, but like Juice Scruggs playing out of position or anything else, that could get really ugly for you in a hurry. And, you know, we all know by now that interior pass rush is what really flummoxes quarterbacks more so than anything.
Bringing in Patrick Creighton. Happy fourth. Happy belated fourth to Patrick Creighton. He is in for In the Loop. This is the version of Area 45 that is invading In the Loop today. Just the solo dolo Patrick Creighton. What's up, PC?
Good morning, my fellow hardworking Americans.
Yes.
Who decided not to call out today.
Very American of us to show up today, especially at, hey, me and Seth especially showing up at that hour. Like, we are at the if you celebrated 4th of July hungover hour. But no, we're actually here. Yeah.
Sean Pendergast is like laying face down in a bush in his red, white, and blue boxers somewhere right this moment. Whereas where Brandon and I decided to work, yes.
I got to believe Sean Pendergast's boxers are the replica from Apollo Creed, from Rocky IV, and he's somewhere that James Brown is playing in the background.
That there is a visual. there is a visual for sure.
He's just not convulsing while he lays face down.
PC, I want to ask you, man. Well, first of all, I want to acknowledge that you are talking to two people who do have an appreciation for outs above average. All right. Okay. We do have an appreciation for the advanced stats. I want to ask you, okay, PC, when you realize that people don't know what you're talking about, that they don't know it, to take it a little easy. I know it's not in your nature. You got this big personality. You only know one way, and I respect it. I'm not trying to tell you to turn your light down. I don't want to do that. But game recognized game, Pat. You know that them dudes on the afternoon show didn't know what the hell you was talking about with them stats, man.
You know, Beast Scott.
This is on Jake Myers, by the way, Seth.
I
had to get in on their feud about Jake Myers.
Yeah, I would figured that would be something about Jake, because Jake Myers has like a celestial outs above average right now.
He's very good.
I have to admit, you are 100% correct, spot on in your assessment of me. If I take out a hammer and I slam it down and you don't understand why I did that, I get a bigger hammer. Yes, I don't necessarily know how to quote ease off the gas. Yeah, I admit like I have faults, just like everybody else. I have faults, and one of my faults is when someone just talks ass dumb to me, I can't help myself. I go to a dark place.
See, I don't feel like they're trying to be ass. By the way, you're listening to KILT HD2. An Odyssey station, but I don't feel like it's as dumb. I feel like it's just more so an outdated take, because there was a point where somebody preferred Mauricio Dubon in center field over Jake Myers. That date has just long passed before. We're not there anymore.
No, and the reality is the reason that Mauricio Dubon was preferred was because at the time, Jake Myers was still struggling to plate terribly. But the idea that Myers was never the best defensive option, I mean, that's why he was the defensive replacement late in games, and why, you know, James Click staked his name on it, why Dana Brown staked his name on it. I mean, you get the two, quote, smartest guys of the organization both said, we should play Jake Myers in center field. The smart guys didn't suddenly become dumb. But, you know, sometimes you can't roll all that together in one. And look, I accept that I do have fault in this, and that I could have done a better job of explaining it.
Yes.
I could have been slightly less angry. I mean, it's not my nature. But
yeah, you don't.
I didn't realize it got that heated. I got to go back and listen to
it. Oh, you got to check out some of these crosstalks, man. You got to check some of
them. Just...
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Final segment here on Payne and Pendergast. Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast. And earlier in the show, we talked about the biggest weakness for the Texans going into training camp. But CBS Sports made an attempt to look at the biggest weakness for all of the AFC teams. All of the AFC teams going into training camp. And so I figured, okay, we can talk about the Texans. And if you missed it, they say defensive tackle. Fortunately, we've got an expert in defensive tackle here on the show to kind of talk about that with us. So I feel good about that. I was like, oh, defensive tackle. I know who to talk about that with. So that was pretty cool. But on top of that, though, and I feel like
I wasn't able to give you the answer that every... I feel this all offseason. I'm giving an answer about how I feel about the defensive tackle, and it's more optimistic than most people's, but it's not the answer they want to hear.
Yeah.
It's not, I'm not delivering them to a promised land.
Yeah, but you know, you're not no damn jukebox. You know, this ain't a this is not have it your way. I don't know if Burger King still does it, have it your way. So that might be a dated reference. But this ain't Burger King of the late 90s. You don't get to just have it your way. We encourage your input. 713-572-4610 is how you text the show. We want you to comment in our YouTube and chat, or our YouTube and Twitch chat streams and everything like that. But this ain't no have it your way. We're gonna give you what we think, man. We're going to give you what it is. And to me, like, I can appreciate the opposite perspective of the defensive tackle situation. I wouldn't even call it opposite, just some perspective on the defensive tackle situation with the Texans, because I remember, Seth, sitting right here in this studio and just being not mad or disappointed, but really just outright confused and somewhat bewildered by what the Texans were doing at that position. Like when they traded Malik Collins, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to pretend like Malik Collins is freaking Warren Sapp or anything. Like, I don't want to overstate this thing, but Malik Collins is a good football player. Or at least I thought he was. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. So I'm like, okay, he's a good football player. They just paid him last year. I don't get this. I don't understand what they're doing here. Now, we later understand they were trying to get Eric Armstead, and then they realized that they got a shot at Danielle Hunter, so they wanted to make sure they could do that. And just the way the dominoes fell did not work out for them to replace or to fill the defensive tackle position the way maybe we would have ideally wanted them to. But I think that we'll take what they did on the edge, and there is an element of trusting in D'Amico Ryans as a defensive mind, as a leader, and even Nick Caserio, I think, to a large degree, as a team builder, as a roster constructor, to kind of figure it out, even if they are going to take a slight step back at that position.
Well, I think that, you know, I watched the first episode of Hard Knocks yesterday, where Joe Shane, their GM, was taking a lot of heat for some of the little clips that had popped out in the previews and everything, where it almost made it look like Joe Shane didn't think Saquon Barkley was that good or what have you. When you watch the entire episode and you watch the discussions they were having about it, it was much more so that Joe Shane very much respects Saquon Barkley as a running back, but that they just have so many holes to fill that I don't think Joe Shane respected the running back position in total as much as like getting these various other needs that they have on the roster and these holes filled, and that he didn't want to spend that Saquon Barkley type of money on whether he was worth it or not. He didn't want to spend that kind of money on the running back position when they need to, they've got only so many pieces of the pie that they can actually fill. So yeah, likewise, I think the Texans wanted a defensive tackle, but they saw this opportunity to just maybe make the edge rushers so fearsome that they can live with a more blue collar effort at defensive tackle if they have that opportunity to get an edge rusher. But it wasn't as it's not like they wouldn't have preferred to also address defensive tackle. They just couldn't make it work with Arik Armstead.
It's an exact dynamic, though, that I wanted to ask you about earlier. Was this whole this idea, especially you, somebody who played the idea of, hey, I'm willing to live with a more blue collar approach in the middle if I can get badasses on the outside, and I think we'll all agree that they have that with the young Will Anderson going into year two, and Danielle Hunter, the established guy that he is. How do you view that approach just generally, and then how do you view it the way that the Texans are going to apply it? Like, hey, we're badasses on the edge, and we got some blue collar guys that are just going to have their hard hat and be ready to play in the middle.
I think that if I had to choose between Arik Armstead with Danico Autry on the edge as like the other guy that I think would have played a lot more as just a pure edge player if Danielle Hunter weren't there, I like the setup they have right now just because Danielle Hunter is that good, and that Arik Armstead also has age and injury concerns, and he's missed some time in the last couple of years as a guy who's in his 30s, and he's not as impactful a pass rusher as Danielle Hunter. I think that's the part that, above and all, like first and foremost, if you want to be a really fearsome defense in the modern NFL, you want to have good pass rushers, like scary pass rushers. And they've got that in Danielle Hunter, and I think likely they have that in Will Anderson as long as he takes another step forward like a lot of young pass rushers do from year one to year two. So I would prefer the situation they have right now. It doesn't mean that I'm super, super comfortable with the defensive tackle situation, but I just think that's a better, more aggressively, that's a more aggressive mindset to have those two A-plus edge rushers on your roster.
So I thought this was interesting in CBS Sports' list of the weaknesses for every AFC team. They break it down by division, and when they get to the AFC South, every team in the division, their listed or stated weakness by per CBS Sports is on the defensive side of the ball. Okay, so for the Texans, as we mentioned, it's defensive tackle. But the other teams in the division, and this makes me feel good about the Texans because I feel like they have the best quarterback. I feel like their offense I feel best about. And maybe you could throw the Colts out there because of their because of their head coach. Like, I believe in Shane Steichen. We'll see how things go with Anthony Richardson, if he can stay on the field, how it's going to translate. He looked like less of a project when he was healthy. When he was out there, he looked like less of a project than the way he was discussed or the way he was billed coming out of Florida. So that will be interesting if he can actually stay on the field, how his skill set and Shane Steichen's coaching will marry up, and what that's going to look like. But as it pertains to the Texans right now, as we sit here, I feel best about them offensively. And if what CBS Sports is saying about the division, if it's to be believed or if it is true, I'm like, okay, well, all I'm looking at is, okay, the Colts, what's their biggest weakness? Cornerback. All right, well, they ain't got nobody that can stay with all of these weapons and compete with CJ Stroud and his weapons. Same thing for the Jaguars. Their weakness, cornerback. They don't have nobody that can stay with all of these weapons and compete with CJ Stroud. Titans, defensive line. Oh, great. They don't have enough to get to C.J. Stroud. And thank God, because I don't know what this offensive line is for sure going to look like. They had a historic number of injuries, it felt like, last year. So I look at this list, and I think, for as much as I think about, oh, I don't know exactly what this defensive tackle situation is going to look like for the Texans, I'm like, if this list is believed to be true, the rest of the division better watch out. Because their weaknesses are on defense, and the Texans' very, very, very specific strength is in C.J. Stroud and all the weapons that they got.
The one thing that I would say about the Titans' weakness is that they list defensive line as their weakness. I guess a lot of that depends on what they get out of Tavondre Sweat, the kid from University of Texas who's looks about 350 pounds and has all the potential to be a really, really menacing player. But in my mind, it's if he can play at 320. Like, he really, like, you could see in college when his weight got to him and when that he just kind of ran out of steam at times. So for this Texans offensive line, which is still very unproven on the interior, a lot of it rides on, all right, if this Tavondre Sweat ends up getting religion and, like, playing at a slimmer body weight, that he could be a real, like, a literal headache for the Texans. And even if he can't, like, all it takes is him, Tavondre Sweat, bull rushing your left guard once or twice directly into the lap of C.J. Stroud, then that you've got issues there. So that's the one thing to watch with the Titans. I think with the Colts like their young guys a lot. Jalen Jones and Dallas Flowers are like a second and a third year player that I think the Colts really like, and that Dallas Flowers just didn't develop quite the same way that they thought he was going to, but they're still very bullish on him. So I think that's the thing to watch for the Colts is, all right, do they actually have a weak spot there? Because the Colts, in their offseason, they did very, very little to add. Like, it was about re-signing Kenny Moore and a few of those other guys, and yet that was a team with Gardner Minshew as the quarterback that was within one or two series versus the Texans of making the playoffs last year. You know, they kind of had the Texans' exact same season. It's just that they did it under the radar and with Gardner Minshew, so there wasn't a lot of fanfare about it. I guess that's the thing that's where it all goes back to. They might have questions on their defense with the Colts, but the huge X factor by far still is just Anthony Richardson and what he looks like with Shane Steichen over the course of 17 games, if he can actually stay on the field for 17 games.
Yeah, you mentioned Tavondre Sweat, Texas Longhorn, Huntsville kid. If he can just go out there and just be a compliment to Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah.
You know, like that terrifies me. terrifies it. Like, if he can just be, forget being like a star or anything, but if he can be disciplined, play at a controllable weight, and just be disruptive and be a compliment to Jeffrey Simmons. I don't know about that being a weakness. I know that actually scares the hell out of me. Almost,
right? Yeah,
almost cuss too. Almost it scares the bleep out of me.
Because Jeffrey Simmons is going to command a lot of double teams as he tends to do, and when you pair that with a guy like Tavondre Sweat, even if he's only on the field for 25 or 30 snaps, then that, you know, Tavondre Sweat getting singled up versus last year's version of a Texans left guard, whether it was a banged up, you never saw Kenyon Green, but like Juice Scruggs playing out of position or anything else, that could get really ugly for you in a hurry. And, you know, we all know by now that interior pass rush is what really flummoxes quarterbacks more so than anything.
Bringing in Patrick Creighton. Happy fourth. Happy belated fourth to Patrick Creighton. He is in the loop. This is the version of Area 45 that is invading in the loop today. Just the solo dolo Patrick Creighton. What's up, PC?
Good morning, my fellow hardworking Americans.
Yes.
Who decided not to call out today.
Very American of us to show up today, especially at, hey, me and Seth especially showing up at that hour. Like, we are at the, if you celebrated 4th of July hungover hour, but no, we're actually here. Yeah.
Sean Pendergast is like laying face down in a bush in his red, white, and blue boxers somewhere right this moment. Whereas where Brandon and I decided to work, yes.
I gotta believe Sean Pendergast boxers are the replica from Apollo Creed. from Rocky IV, and he's somewhere that James Brown is playing in the background.
That there is a visual. there is a visual for sure.
He's just not convulsing while he lays face down.
PC, I want to ask you, man. Well, first of all, I want to acknowledge that you are talking to two people who do have an appreciation for Outs Above Average. All right. Okay. We do have an appreciation for the advanced stats. I want to ask you, okay, PC, when you realize that people don't know what you're talking about, that they don't know it, take it a little easy. I know it's not in your nature. You got this big personality. You only know one way, and I respect it. I'm not trying to tell you to turn your light down. I don't want to do that. But game recognized game, Pat. You know that them dudes on the afternoon show didn't know what the hell you was talking about with them stats, man.
You know, Beast Guy.
This is on Jake Myers, by the way, Seth.
I
had to get in on their feud about Jake Myers.
Yeah, I would figured that would be something about Jake, because Jake Myers has like a celestial outs above average right now.
He's very good.
I have to admit, you are 100% correct, spot on in your assessment of me. If I take out a hammer and I slam it down, and you don't understand why I did that, I get a bigger hammer. Yes, I don't necessarily know how to quote ease off the gas. Yeah, I admit like I have faults, just like everybody else. I have faults, and one of my faults is when someone just talks ass dumb to me, I can't help myself. I go to a dark place.
See, I don't feel like they're trying to be asked. By the way, you're listening to KILT, KILT HD2, an Odyssey station. But I don't feel like it's ass dumb. I feel like it's just more so an outdated take, because there was a point where somebody preferred Mauricio Dubon in center field over Jake Myers. That date has just long passed before. We're not there anymore.
No, and the reality is the reason that Mauricio Dubon was preferred was because at the time, Jake Myers was still struggling to plate terribly. But the idea that Myers was never the best defensive option, I mean, that's why he was the defensive replacement late in games, and why, you know, James Click staked his name on it, why Dana Brown staked his name on it. I mean, you get the two, quote, smartest guys of the organization both said, we should play Jake Myers in center field. The smart guys didn't suddenly become dumb. But, you know, sometimes you can't roll all that together in one. And look, I accept that I do have fault in this, and that I could have done a better job of explaining it.
Yes.
I could have been slightly less angry. I mean, it's not my nature. But
yeah, you don't.
I didn't realize it got that heated. I got to go back and listen to this.
Oh, you got to check out some of these crosstalks, right, man. You got to check some of them.
Let's just say I got Ron riled up.
I'll go back in the I'll go back in the archives and listen to that toss from, what, Wednesday?
Wednesday, yeah.
Oh, there was... It started
Tuesday.
Friday last week, and then it would have been on Wednesday, and I'm trying to remember because days are starting to blur on me because
we got the holidays.
I may have partaken in too many adult beverages recently between my anniversary and the 4th of July, and that's kind of on me. But Ron and I have had some fun. I love Ron.
Yeah.
I love Ron. Ron is a great guy. And I love the fact that I can kind of go back and forth with Ron the way that we do, because I don't know that anybody else really wants to go to that place with me. And every now and then I need that.
It was a very, very dark place. Seth, we're going to do this again on Monday, man. Antibodies to you.
Antibodies to you, and enjoy your dark place there, Patrick Creighton. That is your dojo, after all.
I appreciate you, Seth, man. Take care. Seth Payne, B. Scott, guys are awesome.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. Ooh. you get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.